live from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to learn about how L-carnosine has anti-cancer properties. This is from the National Kosung University of Science and Technology in Taiwan, published in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine. It's a very important anti-aging nutrient, but also now it looks like it can suppress cancer cells' migration and intravasation and metastasis. That's important. We'll deal with that and a lot of other issues on health and healing today. Also today, I'm going to look at sharing a letter that I read from a person named Murray about how bad it's become in the world, a state of violence. This is Craig Murray, and he's writing in Violence and the State. I thought you'd find this of interest, so I'm going to share his commentary with you. Also today, we're going to watch or listen to two different video clips. They're both short. One is about an exclusive OAN interview with the former, or the prosecutor general of the entire area of the Ukraine, who took the place of the one that was fired because of instructions from Joe Biden when he said, yeah, you've got $1 billion worth of money we were going to give you, but not if you don't fire within the next 6 hours your inspector general. What the liberal media left out was that, unfortunately, that prosecutor, who had nothing against him, by the way, was looking into Burisma, the energy giant run by a Russian oligarch, and then an oligarch also in Ukraine, where Joe Biden's son sat on the board in a do-nothing job, had no background or experience in the field. And so now here is the general prosecutor that replaced him, Yuri Lysenko, and he's going to tell you that the person that everybody thought was so great, it was like a modern-day Joan of Arc in Congress, who was nailing Trump for his phone call, for a pay-to-play, that's what she was alleging, she's not clean, he says. She perjured herself before Congress. This is only the first of two parts. I'll play the first part today. Why is it that we have this information and none of the mainstream media have touched it? No one. You'll hear it exclusively. Also, we're going to play a piece by Representative Jordan, who is challenging the Democrats' impeachment case in some searing remarks. I've looked at each of his remarks and they are accurate. The trouble is everything has become partisan, instead of looking for the truth wherever it may be. First, you're going to hear from him, and then what he's talking about, the whistleblower. Why can't we know who the whistleblower is? Why is it Adam Schiff who lied and said that he never met the whistleblower, but also met the whistleblower? And why isn't he held to the same accounting of no one's above the law? I guess those in power say they're above the law, but anyone challenging them is not above the law. It's just the hypocrisy of all of it. But anyhow, we will tell you who the whistleblower is. More importantly, we're going to show you the meetings that the whistleblower had, who was at the meetings, what room they were held in the Eisenhower Executive Building, what their purpose was, and how they were conspiring all along to nail Trump and to get rid of any pesky investigations of George Soros or Hunter Biden or Burisma and all these different operatives. You haven't heard any of this. So why is it we've never heard this person's name? You will today. So that is something that we're adding to this just to show you how the American media has been played or is a participant in this playing and how the American public has been lied to. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. And in a new study, researchers from different universities in Taiwan showed that carnosine, C-A-R-N-O-S-I-N-E, a dipeptide found primarily in meat, but it's also capable of being found from vegetarian sources, is capable of inhibiting the migration and invasion of colorectal cancer cells. Now, both of these processes are vital for cancer metastasis, the development of secondary malignant growths, where a lot of people die, not from the primary cancer, but they could from the primary cancer, but it's when it metastasizes, like when a cancer of the throat migrates to the lungs, that really increases your risk of dying. Then from the lungs, it metastasizes to the liver and into the bone and the brain. That's when people generally die. So the bottom line is this. The first step in tumor metastasis is the invasion or migration of cancer cells into surrounding tissue. This movement is triggered by chemical signals from their environment and facilitated by the activity of the cell membrane and its attachment to the extracellular matrix, kind of a three-dimensional network of large molecules that give structural support to cells. Another way by which cancer spreads is via the blood vessels. Called intravasation, this process involves the entry of cancer cells into the blood or lymph vessels. This allows cancer cells to reach tissue located far away from the original site. And this intravasation is considered a relatively late event in tumor development. And that's where L-carnosine comes in, because it evidently blocks the process. And that is important. So, just another piece of the puzzle. From the University of Buffalo, they find that there's a very strong link between poor diet and age-related macular degeneration. Participants who ate a Western diet, that's the one you see advertised, that's 90% of Americans consume a Western diet, they are 300% more likely to develop late stage of macular degeneration, which is the principal cause of blindness in the United States. Let's make it even more focused. Individuals who ate a diet high in red and processed meat, there's your pizzas, hamburgers, hot dogs, your pork products, fried foods, refined grains, and high-fat dairy, were 300% more likely to develop an eye condition that damages the retina and affects a person's central vision. And this was at the University of Buffalo. And the condition is called late-stage age-related macular degeneration. And it's irreversible, and it affects a person's central vision, taking away their ability to drive and see at night. So this was published in the British Journal of Ophthalmology, one more reason to go to a healthy, clean, plant-based diet with lots of juices. From Shamok University in South Korea comes a study that sheds light on the ability of music therapy to relieve stress. It's a stress-ridden world, we all know that. There's distress and there's stress. Going on a trip, that's stress. How you get there can be distress. Waiting 8 hours in an airport, that's distress. Being stuck someplace and having your credit card stolen or your cash, that's distress. Being at that place, it's an upbeat stress. Going to a concert and being excited by it, that's stress. But those are not unhealthy stresses. It's the distress that's unhealthy. And about 75% of American adults report experiencing moderate to high levels of distress. This was published in the American Psychological Association Journal. And to help deal with this distress, the article was published also in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine, simply showed that listening to music significantly reduced distress-related indicators, which included high blood pressure and increased heart rate. But how would listening to music relieve distress? It's relatively straightforward. It's a group of hormones. The worst of those is called cortisol. C-O-R-T-I-S-O-L, cortisol. And despite getting a bad rap, cortisol is one of the most important hormones in the body. It helps control blood sugar levels. It reduces inflammation. When a person perceives a threat, cortisol, along with adrenaline, triggers a fight-or-flight response. To get a clearer picture of how the two work, when a threat appears, adrenaline will help a person start running, but it is cortisol which will keep the person running. Cortisol stimulates the liver to convert fat into glucose, which produces energy for activity. So when cortisol levels are high, a person is stimulated to stay active and alert. But as people today constantly experience distress, these levels become unregulated, which can have severe effects in the long run. Unregulated cortisol levels can lead to sleep deprivation, a constant craving of sugary foods, which might develop to severe ailments like diabetes over time. But music therapy is one of the methods to help regulate cortisol levels and reduce distress. For years, music has always been seen as an emotional outlet. But understanding how sound and sound frequencies and rhythm can also induce healthy effects on the body is still new and is being explored. And for this study, the researchers want to measure the effects of music therapy on university students who are under distress. And they found that those that listened to music were far more likely not to have these high cortisol levels. So just something to use as we choose. Also, one more reason why acupuncture is a legitimate science: it can help with rheumatoid arthritis. The Heidelberg School of Chinese Medicine did a study published in the Journal of Alternative Complementary Medicine. And what they believe, the acupoints, according to Chinese medicine, functional diagnosis is extremely relevant to assess the effectiveness of acupuncture in a patient group primarily defined as Western medicine diagnosis. And the researchers found people with rheumatoid arthritis who had a regular functional diagnosis, and they used acupuncture, and they found substantial improvement. So based on these results, the researchers concluded that acupuncture treatment, especially when the right acupoints are chosen, is highly effective in reducing symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis. I'm a big advocate of coconut oil. I've studied the science very carefully. I use it myself, both on my skin and my hair, and I massage it in at night. And according to Kanzawa University in Japan, coconut oil focuses on replacing antibiotics to combat antibiotic-resistant pathogens. Let me give a primer on this so at least you understand the context. Coconut oil is nature's richest source of lauric acid, that's L-A-U-R-I-C, long known to be a powerful antimicrobial. It is a saturated fat, but it has almost 50% lauric acid. Now, nature's next most abundant source of lauric acid is human breast milk, but it comes in a distant second. For years now, research, primarily outside the United States, on coconut oil has focused on the use of lauric acid as an adjuvant or a replacement for antibiotic drugs that have lost their effectiveness due to the emergence of antibiotic pathogens. And we now see more studies where coconut oil is studied in this context. And the Japanese study published in the journal Cell Transplant was especially promising, as it showed that lauric acid could potentially be used as a broad-spectrum antimicrobial agent without disrupting the good bacteria of the human gut, the microbiota. So that's good news, especially in a country that doesn't do their homework, but instead runs out and takes an antibiotic for a cold or flu, which are viral in nature, and the antibiotics at best only work on bacteria. In this case, it wiped out Staphylococcus aureus, and that made a big difference. This was published, another study was published from Nigeria in the Journal of Food Biochemistry, and it looked at using extra virgin coconut oil as an adjuvant therapy for a drug which is gentamicin, and it was equal, so that's important. So those are some of the latest on health and healing. I'm not going to go extra on this today because I want to get everything else in. So we're going to take a break, come back from the break, and we're going directly into this discussion by a newscaster about the prosecuting general who replaced the one that was fired, is calling out this woman, Ambassador Yovanovitch, saying she perjured herself. But there's a lot more. And this is the story no one in the media has told you yet, and it will change your perspective.
Chanel Rion has been tracking down Ukrainian witnesses as part of an exclusive OAN investigative series dismantling the Adam Schiff impeachment hoax.
In an exclusive interview with One America News, Ukrainian former Prosecutor General Yuri Lutsenko says Yovanovitch perjured herself before Congress and America, and he has the documents to prove it.
So, Mr. Lutsenko, you inherited Mr. Shokin's Prosecutor General office. And describe for us your first interaction with the U.S. Embassy in this position.
So everything was good, but then Yovanovitch visited me.
Ambassador Yovanovitch.
Ambassador Yovanovitch and Mr. Kent, they visited me for small negotiation or tokens.
Did they visit you in your office? Just curious.
Yes. Firstly, I visited her in her office, and then it was the second meeting, but the first in my office. They visited me. And we spoke normally, and she asked me to change some old deputies.
For context, when Obama's point man for Ukraine, Joe Biden, bragged about how he threatened to withhold $1 billion in U.S. aid in order to successfully fire the prosecutor, Viktor Shokin, Biden paints himself the hero, performing a public service.
I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I looked, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money.
Biden never mentioned the fact his son Hunter was on the board of Burisma, Ukraine's largest oil and gas company. Biden also never mentioned the fact that the prosecutor he got fired was investigating Burisma. This conflict of interest raised little actual interest amongst the media. That's when our interview Yuri Lutsenko inherited the fired prosecutor's office. But soon after the inheritance, Lutsenko received an interesting visit.
But then she asked me about to close case of one person. Then I said, no, it is impossible. I couldn't close any case without investigation. So I took a piece of paper on my table and I write these three, not cases, but enemies: Kasko, Leshenko, Shabunin. Okay, Miss Ambassador, Madam Ambassador. Let's continue your untouchable list. She asked me, why are you so serious? And then I destroyed this list. So while I am general prosecutor, no president, no ambassador could give me or could announce me such lists. That was the full story. So she ran immediately from the office, and my boy in near office doors asked me, what you told her? His red face and very angry. I didn't agree to receive any orders to open or to close criminal cases.
Fast forward to Adam Schiff's impeachment inquiry, and Schiff called up Ambassador Yovanovitch to testify. Lutsenko says he was shocked to watch Yovanovitch's testimony when she said she never gave him such a list. Technically, says Lutsenko, no, she never gave him a list. The list still came from her. When Lutsenko found a case in which $7 billion went to the U.S. via possible money laundering to a firm called Franklin Templeton, he wanted help from the U.S. Justice Department to track down and retrieve this money. Ambassador Yovanovitch, says Lutsenko, played the obstructor.
I was once again shocked when Madame Yovanovitch told to members of the committee that Lutsenko asked me to organize his meeting with American Attorney General. But you know, gentlemen, that there is a procedure for this, she told. The procedure that Lutsenko should, or even must, give us an short topic, what points he wants to discuss with American law enforcement bodies. And Yovanovitch said, and he never gave us such an information. I have bad news for Madame Yovanovitch. This is my letter, my deputy letter, to request for cooperation in investigation against the criminal organization of Yanukovych and regarding possible investment in the U.S. based mutual and other funds for the purpose of money laundering.
Stay tuned. For more bombshells from this exclusive interview, watch for the next part in our...
Okay, so just to summarize what was said, was that what was said in Congress, according to this man, were lies. And yet, depending upon who has control of the committee and the hearings, you will call someone else out and bring in the FBI if you found the people you're questioning to be lying, but not your own witnesses. And he's saying that the woman showed up, the U.S. ambassador, to the Ukraine and said, I want these cases deep-sixed, done, over. Well, one of those cases was Burisma, which was the oligarch that he mentioned that he is accusing of money laundering, and Joe Biden's son sat on the board. And there's more to this. So all along, we've been told just the opposite. The people who are really obstructing justice, the people who are doing a pay-to-play, the people who are in control, what was going on in Ukraine was Hillary Clinton's State Department. And WikiLeaks proves that because they released emails showing how much control and billions of dollars the United States had spent to gain control within the Ukraine. And now the Ukraine didn't want any world, any of the International Monetary Fund or the World Bank money. Now it's getting it and never be able to pay it back. And they knew it. That's why the previous administration didn't want that. And so privatization is going on now in a major way. So why is it the New York Times, with all of its talented and skilled reporters and all the resources at its disposal in the Washington Post, CNN, all the networks, why did they choose not to go behind all this to see the truth? Not a one of them did. That's unfortunate. Now, I'm going to play you an argument that was during the hearings and set aside any partisan effort to try to, you know, align with one side or the other. Just listen to the arguments being made by one individual. And that one individual is calling out what was wrong with this. This is a representative of Jordan. And I want you to hear it, because right after that, what he cannot find, I'm going to share with you.
Jordan. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Castor, I want to go to the document that started it all, the August 12th whistleblower complaint. Bullet point one on page one of the whistleblower's complaint, he says this: over the past 4 months, more than half a dozen U.S. officials have informed me of the various facts related to this effort. Mr. Castor, who are these half a dozen U.S. officials?
We don't know.
We don't know, do we? We had no chance to know for sure who these people were, because we never got to talk to the whistleblower. Is that right, Mr. Castor?
That's right.
We needed to talk to the guy who started it all. We needed to talk to him to figure out who these more than half a dozen people were who formed the basis of his complaint, and we never got to. Adam Schiff's staff got to. Adam Schiff knows who he is, but we don't get to know, and therefore we don't get to know the original people, the six people who formed the basis of this entire thing we've been going through now for 3 months. But we did talk to 17 people, right, Mr. Castor?
That's right.
17 depositions, and you were in every single one. You were the lawyer doing the work for the Republicans in every single one. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And there is one witness who they relied on and built their report around. One witness. Who would that witness be? As I read the report, it's obviously one witness. Who's that witness, Mr. Pastor?
Ambassador Sondland.
Ambassador Sondland. I think you said earlier his name was mentioned, I don't know, what'd you say?
611 times.
611 times. More than Lieutenant Colonel Venman, the guy who was on the call. More than Ambassador Taylor, their first witness, their star witness, the very first hearing in the Intelligence Committee, they relied on Sondland, not the whistleblower, not the more than half a dozen people who informed the whistleblower. They relied on Ambassador Sondland. Why'd they pick Sondland, Mr. Castor?
That's probably the best they got.
Because that's the best they got, the guy who had to file an addendum to his testimony, the guy that had to file the clarification, the guy who said 2 weeks ago, sitting in the same chair you're sitting in, Mr. Castor, in his 23-page opening statement, he said this: unless President Zelensky announces an investigation into Burisma and the Bidens, there would be no call with President Trump, there'd be no meeting with President Trump, there'd be no security assistance money going to Ukraine. That's what Ambassador Sondland said. Mr. Castor, was there an announcement by President Zelensky about investigating the Bidens or Burisma?
No.
No announcement?
No.
Did President Zelensky get a call from President Trump?
Yes.
Did President Zelensky get a meeting with President Trump?
Yes.
Did President Zelensky get the money from the United States?
Yes.
They got the call on July 25th. They got the money on September 11th. They got the meeting on September 25th. Is that right?
Yes.
But the guy who said none of that was going to happen is the guy they build their case around.
Yes.
Is that right, Mr. Sondland?
Yep.
Let me go to one other thing they built their case around. They built their case around a lot of hearsay, didn't they? And the best example of the hearsay, surprisingly enough, is Ambassador Sondland. It's amazing. They built their case around this ambassador, and they built their case around hearsay. And the best example of both is Mr. Sondland, Ambassador Sondland, because he filed his addendum, his clarification, where he says this. We read this a couple weeks ago. We pointed this out a couple weeks ago. He says this in bullet point number two in his clarification. He says, Ambassador Taylor recalls that Mr. Morrison told Ambassador Taylor that I told Mr. Morrison that I conveyed this message to Mr. Yarmak on a September 1st, 2019, in connection with Vice President Pence's visit to Warsaw and a meeting with President Zelensky. That's his clarification. Amazing. Six people, as I said before, having four conversations in one sentence. Ambassador Taylor recalls that Mr. Morrison told Ambassador Taylor that I told Mr. Morrison that I conveyed this message to Mr. Yarmak on September 1st, 2019, in connection with Vice President Pence's visit to Warsaw and a meeting with President Zelensky. That's the clarification. That's their star witness who they built their case around. So-and-so tells so-and-so what somebody said to someone else, and there you have it. That's their case. They forget the four key facts. They forget the fact that we have the call transcript and there was no quid pro quo. They forget the fact the two guys on the call, President Trump and President Zelensky, have said repeatedly there was no pressure, no linkage, no pushing. They forget the fact Ukraine didn't even know aid was held at the time of the call. And they forget the fact, most important, they did nothing to get the aid released, no announcement of any type of investigation whatsoever. They forget all that, those key facts. And they build their case around the guy who had to clarify his testimony with that amazing sentence. Mr. Goldman, did the Democrats publish phone records of the president's attorney?
Mr. Giuliani, yes.
Did the Democrats publish phone records of a member of the press?
Yes, who was also involved in this.
Did the Democrats publish phone records of a member of Congress?
Yes, who was talking to people involved.
Did the Democrats, is that member of Congress also happens to be your boss's political opponent, that those phone records were published of? So the Democrats, they run this kind of investigation, ignoring the facts, not letting the whistleblower come in, and therefore not letting us know if we've talked to the more than half a dozen original sources for the whistleblower's complaint in the first place. The guy has to file an addendum with that clarification sentence. But one thing they did do in their report is they published the phone records of the president's personal lawyer, the phone records of a member of the press, and the phone records of the chairman of the Intelligence Committee's political opponent, Representative Nunes. That's what these guys did. And that's their effort to impeach the president of the United States 11 months before an election.
Clearly, if we're not knowing all the truth from all the people by independent investigative journalists, then what we're left with is to make decisions about what is right, who is wrong, what we should believe or not believe, from all the partisans involved. But here's what's crucial. At no time has the identity of the whistleblower, who supposedly had all this damning information, who was a person of high ethics, who just seemed to have one day said, enough's enough, and I'm going to go to Adam Schiff, which he denied, then he acknowledged. Here's what we can tell you, and we want to thank Lawrence Selman for this information. I'm going to quote. December 2015 was a pivotal month in many respects. During the first week of December 2015, Donald Trump began establishing a substantial lead over his Republican primary opponents. Vice President Joe Biden traveled to Ukraine to announce on December 7th a $190 million program, quote, to fight corruption in law enforcement and reform the justice sector, end quote. But behind the scenes, explicitly linked to a $1 billion loan guarantee to the firing of Ukrainian prosecutor Viktor Shokin, who had been investigating the energy company Burisma, which employed Biden's son, Hunter. Now listen carefully. Here's the scenario. On December 9, 2015, the reported whistleblower, Eric Caramella, held a meeting in room 236 of the Eisenhower Executive Office Building with Daria Kalmanuk, Executive Director of the Ukrainian Anti-Corruption Action Center, which was 59% funded by Barack Obama's State Department and the International Renaissance Foundation, a George Soros organization. Also attending that meeting was Catherine Newcomb, attorney in the Criminal Division Office of Overseas Prosecutorial Development with the U.S. Department of Justice, where, among other duties, she oversaw the Department of Legal Assistance Program to Ukraine. On December 15th, Paul Manafort was undoubtedly considering approaching the Trump campaign to rejuvenate his U.S. political bona fides and mitigate the legal and financial difficulties he was experiencing at the time. From the beginning of his association with the Trump campaign, Roger Stone, a longtime Manafort partner, made a strong case to Trump to bring in Manafort, who would officially connect to the campaign immediately after February 1, 2016. Based on events occurring during that same period where Obama's deep state operatives were aware of Manafort's intent and already intending to use his past questionable practices and links to Russian agent Trump, end quote. Well, such awareness of Manafort's plans could have been obtained either through FBI surveillance, which began in 2014 and ended in early 2016, or through information provided by Manafort's associates. For example, Ukrainian businessman Kilmenik, who worked for Manafort and was an FBI and Department of State asset, meaning a spy, not a Russian agent, as later painted by the Mueller investigation. According to White House visitor logs, now this is where it's very detailed, on January 19, 2016, the whistleblower, the so-called whistleblower, Eric Caramella, chaired a meeting of FBI, Department of Justice, and Department of State personnel, which had two main objectives. One, to coerce the Ukrainians to drop the Burisma probe, which involved Vice President Joseph Biden's son, Hunter, and allow the FBI to take it over. And two, to reopen a closed 2014 FBI investigation that focused heavily on GOP lobbyist Paul Manafort, whose firm long had been tied to Trump through his partner and Trump pal Roger Stone. Now let's talk for a moment. Here's a meeting that we've never been told about, where there were a number of individuals. Now he said, now who are these, you know, six or seven people that we're not allowed to know their names or their titles? Well, and we were told nothing about the whistleblower chairing a meeting so that the Burisma probe could be killed. Now go back to what the next prosecutor general said. He was told, drop these three cases, no more investigations of these people, including the owner of Burisma, the oligarch. Now back. Again, according to White House logs, the attendees at the January 19th, 2016 meeting in room 230A of the Eisenhower Office Building, and here it is, Eric Caramella, National Security Council Director for Ukraine, Lisa Zentos, National Security Council Director for Eastern Europe, Anna Leminovit, Legal Specialist, U.S. Embassy Kiev and U.S. Department of Justice Anti-Corruption Program, Catherine Newcomb, Attorney in the Criminal Division of the Office of Overseas Prosecutorial and also Jeffrey Cole, resident legal advisor at the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine, presumed to be FBI. Just 2 weeks after that meeting, on February 2, 2016, according to White House logs, the so-called whistleblower chaired a meeting in room 374 of the Eisenhower Executive Office, which seemed to be a planning session to reopen an investigation of Paul Manafort. And the people who were at that meeting, Michael Lieberman, Deputy Assistant Secretary, and Scott Rembrandt, Anti-Money Laundering Task Force, Justin Roland, Special Agent, Financial Crimes, FBI, and Jose Borrario, Acting Section Chief, Office of Special Measure. And so, once again, when you look at this, you see the names and the titles. That means that this whistleblower was known to all these people, was heading up and coordinating all these activities, and none of this has been revealed. Because when you think of whistleblower, you think of people like, Chelsea Manning or Edward Snowden. No, this person's not a whistleblower. This is an active agent used by the deep state. And by the way, Brennan, the head of the CIA, knew that information in the Steele dossier was false, knew the claims were false, lied before Congress, and said that didn't have any of that information. Will he be punished for perjury? Will Eric Clapper be punished for lying before Congress? No. No, so we have been misled all the way around on this, just like we were misled by the Bush administration on weapons of mass destruction when this program, we showed you how Judith Miller was wrong. Before the war, we showed why it shouldn't happen and how her so-called curveball informant had been shown to be lying and was not credible. This was all set up in Vice President of the United States' executive office, Scooter Libby, his director for Cheney, handpicked, cherry-picked certain CIA operatives to work there and create false security information, national security information, and then use that as, well, will the next thing we see be a mushroom? And Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, everybody went with it. And you see the consequences. So I just want to let you all know that we're always being lied to, always being manipulated, and the deep state is behind all this. And they can't stand Trump. There's a lot of reasons not to like Trump. But what I like even less than Trump is a coup d'etat and the corpus of the liberal community. The Democratic liberal community has supported this. All of its journalists, all of its broadcasters, all the lies. And unfortunately, that's why a lot of people today are just sick of all this. I'm Gary Nall. Just wanted to share stuff that you're not going to see anywhere else. We're going to take a break and come right back because we have on the line a person who just finished the anti-aging study and the results of his blood work in. Again, I don't know any of this blood work. I'll be finding out from one of the people who is going to interpret it for us. And we're going to hear from John because this, I believe, is very important. Please stay with us. Back in a moment.
Lots of fancy clothes and drive a big fine Cadillac, not knowing all the time I had these things. My friends were stabbing me straight in my back. No, even had a house.
Tomorrow we'll be doing a very long and very comprehensive, in-depth original commentary on the environment. Now, in this commentary tomorrow, which will not be heard on BAI, we will be discussing best places to live that are sustainable, worst places to live that are not, the things you can do for yourself, organizations that are there to help people who are looking to be more self-sufficient. We're going to look at the entirety of our environmental crisis, what we're doing or not doing, and the likely outcome of whether the government, federal, state, or local, corporate America, our professional classes, our working classes are going to do anything. We're very good at, you know, acknowledging the 17-year-old Greta for her raising the alarm, being a Cassandra, but nothing is happening even behind her, except a lot of people who I believe are using her. I believe she's well-intentioned, but she's also has a father that's and a mother who are both into acting, and this has been a boom for them. Of course, all those people like Al Gore, who look at this as a possible hundreds of billions, even trillions of dollars, gained by putting money into specific causes that'll do nothing to reduce the degradation of the planet or the coming challenges we face. It's all a game. Everything out there is a game. We just try to let you know what it is so you don't get caught up in it. Anyhow, it's going to be a very powerful commentary, and it'll take up most of the hour. So that'll be tomorrow. Just want to let you know it's coming. Also, we have been interviewing lawyers, lots of lawyers. Unfortunately, most of them are coming with the idea that they just need work, and you know, you have to have a commitment to social justice issues. But we are going to hire one or two lawyers because our other lawyers are working on a major case that we intend to bring shortly, and it's taking all their time. So if you're one of those lawyers for the people, either part-time or full-time, give my office a call. We're interviewing. And I interview them. I'm the one that does the hiring, but they screen them. Call 646-926-5445. 646-926-5445 and speak with Glenn if this interests you. Now we're going to go over and say hello to Lou Ann Panessi. Lou Ann was one of our medical staff that helped with the exercising of all of the different standards that were necessary and guiding them through our just completed, well, the on-campus is completion. We're now in the final 2 weeks of a 90-day protocol, but they took blood chemistries the first day, and then on day 60, they'll be taking one more day on day 90. And people are home now, and we're not reaching out to them because whether they succeed or fail, at this moment and going to the end of 90 days, they have to do it on their own. And by the way, just so I'll explain this, in any study, any good clinical study, you can't be intervening constantly. Otherwise, that skews the outcome. Let me give you an example. Let's just say that, you know, you weren't a great college student. You did what you wanted to do, but you also kind of used college as a dorm party. And you socialized and had a lot of fun. You thought that was more important than just studying. And then your graduation day comes, and now you're insecure, and you say, but okay, I'm going to ask all my professors to come with me and be there when I wake up in the morning and tell me how I should deal with my issues that day, because I'm not prepared for that. Well, that wouldn't make any sense. There's a day of reckoning in life where we get out of the bubble, we get out of our conditioned mode, and we either succeed or fail. Both are instructive. If we fail, we learn the lessons of that failure. So we can reapproach ourselves and say, okay, next time I do something like this, let me do it with full commitment. Or we succeed, in which case, what was it allowed you to succeed that you can pass on to other people to show it's doable? See, they're both important. Lou Ann's on the line now, and she has someone. And Lou Ann, you've seen what I have not yet seen, the results. And I only want you to go over the results of just the person you have on the phone today, because all the other results have to be given over to the scientific committee. And then once they have reviewed it, then I can put the people on the air and share it with the audience.
Well, Gary, we weren't sure how this was going to turn out. And I think that what you had hoped for was actually achieved, especially with John on the line. And we had a lot of people named John in this study. This is one of the Johns. And it was his results are nothing short of remarkable. And I'm going to share this with you, and you'll let us know what your thoughts are. One of the most important markers in the lab work is the markers for heart disease. And when John first came in, his HDL good cholesterol was very low. It was only 35. And at the end of the 8 weeks, it went up to 42, which is now in the normal range. His bad cholesterol, the LDL, went from 126, which was too high, all the way down to 74, which is now in the normal range. In addition to that, his LDL, the LDL cholesterol went from 138, that's his regular cholesterol, all the way down to 76, which is phenomenal. And the HDL cholesterol, which is the bad cholesterol, that's the bad cholesterol, went from 138, which is very high, all the way down to 43, which is well in the normal range. Now, when we're looking at atherosclerosis and heart disease, we look at particle size, the LDL particle size. His went from 895, which is extremely high, all the way down to 425, which is normal. And then his lipoprotein insulin resistance score went from 50, which was high, all the way down to 36. You know, these are very, very statistical significant numbers. His apolipoprotein B, which is, again, one of the main indicators of atherosclerosis and heart disease, went from 108, so this man was a pretty high risk for heart disease, and he went all the way down to 79. Toppling these numbers like this is not something that should be taken lightly, and this is a reflection of the lifestyle that he integrated for 8 weeks. Very, very impressive. Now, right along with that, we look at people's vital signs. His blood pressure remained good and stable throughout the entire protocol, the 8 weeks. He came in with a body fat of 22.5%, and he left with a body fat of, get this, 14.8%. Very impressive. Also, his muscle mass went from 36.9% all the way up to 40.5%, and that's because of the resistance exercise he was doing. What was very impressive for me was the fact that his bone density went from 4.6 up to 5.8. So he built up bone. Now, for a 72-year-old, this is almost unheard of, Gary. And let's look at strength. In the gym, when he first started, he had the pull down, the shoulder pull down, on 25 pounds, and he was able to do 10 reps before he was exhausted. On the last day, he sat in front of me and did 140 pounds, and he did 26 reps. He knocked them right out. That's an absolute increase in strength. When he first came in, he couldn't do a sit-up. He struggled. He couldn't get a sit-up in. And by the end of 8 weeks, 44 sit-ups at metronome pace. Push-ups, he started out, he could do 15 push-ups. On the last day, he did 34 push-ups. We also did this thing called wall ball squats. And that means you have an exercise medicine ball behind you, and you squat down with the ball on your back. And the first time he came in, he did 30 reps with no weights, and it was a struggle for him. After 8 weeks, he was holding 15 pounds in each arm, and he did 180 reps. He could have gone more. So this is a beautiful example of someone who was focused, who was determined, who was self-disciplined. Throughout the whole time, he kept a very positive mental attitude, and he went to go home for his final month at home in just a magnificent state of mind, a strong, vital body. And I think that this is a beautiful example of what can be done to someone as they age. Instead of deteriorating, he got stronger and more vital.
I know you're only giving us some samples of the different ones because there are over 67 measurements that were taken of the blood workup. Do you have anything in front of you on his aging hormones?
Let me see. I'm pretty sure his hormones, well, one of the things that was very significant was his PSA, his prostate-specific antigen, went from 5.4, which is high, Are you ready? Came all the way down to 2.4, which is normal. That is significant.
That's very significant. All right, we're going to go over to John in a moment, but while we're over to John, please look to see any of the other aging hormones. I'd like to hear from about them. John, nice to have you with us.
Nice to be on, Gary.
John, is everything that Luann said accurate?
Yes, except for one thing. I'm 73, not 72 years old.
All right.
Oh, he had a birthday. He had a birthday.
I had a birthday on the second day of the study on September 30th.
How do you feel today, John?
Great. Absolutely great.
When you look in the mirror, what do you see that's different than before you started this study?
I don't see someone 73 years old. I don't feel like I'm 73 years old. Not at all. I see the future. I see a new outlook I have on life, especially knowing my energy, my life energy. It changed everything, you know. I'm very excited, and I definitely plan to continue.
Good. You were one of the ones living in the lake house, correct?
Yes, yes.
All right. I understand you all were highly disciplined, very focused, and I haven't seen the results. Again, I'm not the one doing the final computations. That's done by other people. But I'm definitely hopeful that all the other people's results are as equally impressive as yours, because you had statistically significant improvement. That's the standard by which science measures something as being objective, that you had a good result. When you have more of a statistical increase, and you had off the chart, you had in some cases almost a 50 to 100% increase, and that's phenomenal. So we're very happy for that. John, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Gary.
Luann, any last comments?
Well, I'm looking at his DHEA and his free testosterone and his estradiol. Those stayed pretty stable. His C-reactive protein stayed stable. His homocysteine was stable, all normal, all within normal limits. So, he just did phenomenal. We're just so happy for him.
How many more studies have you gotten the results on?
Well, I've gotten all the lab results in. I have all the statistics now, and now it's a matter of mapping them out on a grid. And that's what I'm working on now.
Okay, good. Well, we've got one step forward now. Once I see all the results, which I'll see next week, and then I'll review those with the scientific committee, then I've already had a discussion twice now, once yesterday and then at the end of last week, that we're going to do a reproducing study. And the reason for that is that, as one scientist said to me, most scientific studies today are not reproducible, which means somewhere there is a flaw. And that casts doubt on the reliability of that study, whatever the outcome is. And he said, do the exact same protocol on a new group of people and have outside scientists, medical doctors, be there reviewing it. You cannot control the study as you did this time, but you can do your lectures in the evening and see if we get the same outcome. If we get the same outcome, then we've made history. Up to this point, we have, he said, with these good outcomes thus far, I don't believe he saw all that many, is very promising. So it's a big task, because I got to clear my schedule of lectures and premieres and filming and everything else I do during that period of time. But if we can extend people's life, if we can help reverse disease, if we can help prevent disease, if we can change the biological markers in the body so that people really start to focus on their biological age instead of their chronological age, then we can rewrite all social interactions. Because historically, when you reach certain age points, markers, you were considered old and then very old, and then, well, they lived a good life, they reached 80. Today, with what we know in anti-aging medicine, if we apply these principles and these protocols, we could be 80 and biologically be 60. We could be 50 and be 35. That's what's possible. And this is without stem cells, because one of the things this, that you'll see in the that Richard and I are writing in depth is why this happens. And you might forget, but going clear back, it took us 3 months to find 5 peer-reviewed studies for every single ingredient that these people consume. If we gave them a glass of vegetable juice with 10 vegetables, we had to have 5 peer-reviewed studies for every vegetable showing what it did at the DNA level. And the effort was to stimulate the growth of new immature stem cells in older people, something that's just not done. And so everyone else out there, hundreds of thousands of scientists, are rushing to get the Nobel Prize for getting that one unique stem cell that can rejuvenate tissue and therefore help with disease. And I believe that that is going to happen, because the scientists I'm working with sponsor over 40 international anti-aging symposium and continuing education classes for scientists around the world every year. So I'm very excited by what I see. They're excited. Now it gets down to the nitty-gritty, and is it reproducible? And I believe that it will be reproducible. So if anyone's interested, give Luann a call. There's very strict criteria. You can't have life-ending diseases. You have to be 60 and older. Though we are going to have a subgroup of 50 and over to see what we can do with the younger person and changing their biochemistry even much younger than what they are. And you have to be on campus for 60 days and then followed up for 30 at home. You have to get your blood workup done 3 times. And these are not normal blood workups. These have to be sent to a special lab. And everything is reviewed by a whole group before it happens and after it happens. And we'll have people there who are on staff guiding people through this whole protocol. I will be there, but I will not be the person administering it. There'll be another group of scientists I've already spoken to who will be administering it. So give your number out, Luann. And we have to have the same number of people. We can't have more people or less.
Right. Okay. My number is 903-881-7008. That's 903-881-7008. There are fees involved. There are criteria, like you said. And I interview everyone to make sure it's going to be the right study for them.
Good. Okay, thank you. Well, that, you know, we've crossed this first barrier, and I am very pleased with the outcome. Now we'll start to see the results from everyone, and then it goes into the hands of a medical biostatistician who does the final workup, and then the article is written for peer review submission. But I'm pretty sure that we're going to be talking about this at international anti-aging conferences of scientists around the world multiple times over the next 12 months. Well, that's a nice way to end a show, listening to some good news like that. I look forward to being back tomorrow, and you should pay attention, because tomorrow you're going to hear what will be a completely different approach to understanding environmental issues, what we're doing right, what we're not doing at all, and what we're doing wrong, even if we think we're doing it right, and how we as individuals, individually and collectively, can survive the future. Have a nice day, everyone.